Early Years by Swami Viswanathan. It was in the beginning of January 1921 that I first saw Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharishi. He was then living in Skandashramam, which looks like the very heart of the majestic hill Arunachalam. It is a beautiful, quiet spot with a cluster of coconut and other trees and a perennial crystal clear spring. The Maharishi was there at the very core of such natural beauty on the eastern slope of the sacred Arunachala. I saw in him something quite arresting, which clearly distinguished him from all others I had seen. He seemed to live apart from the physical frame and detached from it. His look and smile had remarkable spiritual charm. When he spoke, the words seemed to come out of an abyss. One could see immaculate purity and non-attachment in him and in his movements. I sensed something very refined, lofty and sacred about him. In his vicinity, the mind's distractions were overpowered by an austere and potent calmness, and the unique bliss of peace was directly experienced. This indeed is the blissful atmosphere of Ramana, Ramana Lahiri. In this ecstasy of grace, one loses one's sense of individuality, and there remains something grand and all-pervading, all-devouring. This indeed is the spirit of Arunachala, which swallows up the whole universe by its gracious effulgence. There were about 10 devotees living with him, including his mother and younger brother. There were also a few earnest devotees who had then gathered there from various places. One of them was Valiyamai Murugar, who for hours every day sang with great fervor the Tamil songs in praise of Lord Subramania, well known as Tirupugal. Often when he sang, Bhagavan would tap with two small sticks at the two rings of an iron brazier of live coal kept in front of him to keep time, that is, tala. Fumes of incense spread out in rolls from the brazier, suffused with the subtle holy influence of Maharishi. While Maharishi's hands were thus tapping at the brazier, his unfathomable look of grace gave one a glimpse of the beyond in silence. It was an unforgettable experience. There was also a devotee from Chidambaram, Subramania Iyer, who often sang with great fervor the Tiruvachakam, hymns in praise of Arunachala, composed by Maharishi, and some songs in praise of Maharishi himself. One morning, when he began a song on Maharishi with the refrain, Ramana Sadguru, Ramana Sadguru, Ramana Sadguru Rayane, Maharishi joined him singing. The devotee was so much amused at this that he burst with laughter and exclaimed, where else could one find somebody singing his own praise thus? Maharishi replied, oh, what is there extraordinary about it? Why limit Ramana to a form of 6 feet? When you sing on Ramana, is it not the all-pervading reality that you adore? Why should I not sing its glory? We all felt lifted to Maharishi's standpoint. The ashramites got up at dawn and sang selections from Devaram, Tiruvachakam and hymns to Arunachala. Maharishi's brother told him, but I knew some hints in Sanskrit, and Maharishi looked at me expectantly. Seeing that it was impossible to avoid it, I sang a few verses in Sanskrit. When I had finished, Maharishi gently looked at me and said, "You have learned all this?" Not so in my case. I knew nothing, had learned nothing then. Some great power took possession of me and effected a thorough transformation. Whoever then knew that it was to happen thus? Your father, who was intending in his boyhood to go to the Himalayas for tapas, has become the head of a big family. And I, who knew nothing and planned nothing, have been drawn and kept down here for good. When I left home, I was like a speck swept on by a tremendous flood. I knew not the body nor the world. I knew not whether it was day or night. It was difficult even to open my eyes. The eyelids seemed to be glued down. The body became a mere skeleton. Visitors pitied my plight, as they were not aware how blissful I was. It was only years later that I came across the term Brahman when people brought some books on Vedanta to me. And I was amused and said to myself, "Is this known as Brahman?" An old devotee of Maharishi, Siva Prakasam Pillai, has mentioned this in his Ramana Charitra Ahaval as the sage who obtained consciousness of Brahman without knowing even the term Brahman. Finding that I knew a bit of Sanskrit, Maharishi asked me to take down a copy of Sri Ramana Gita and give it to my father, saying briefly, "He will understand." Sri Ramana Gita is a redaction of Maharishi's teachings in Sanskrit verse by his famous disciple Kavyakanta Ganapati Sastri. Though I made a copy of that manuscript and took it with me, I did not then enter into the details of the teaching it contained. I learned from the ashramites that Ganapati Sastri, the great scholar and poet, was an ardent devotee of Maharishi, and that he had got the title Kavyakanta from a board of eminent scholars of Navadvipa in Bengal very early in his career. Thus, I was in Maharishi's holy presence for a week and then returned home. As I was about to take leave of Bhagwan, a bit of camphor was lit and set before him, as is traditionally done before manifestations or images of divinity. I drank in the holy form of the Maharishi with my eyes and remembered the following Upanishadic verse: "There the sun shines not, nor the moon or stars, not the flashes of lightning. How could this fire? He shines, and all these shine by his glory. All this appears by the grace of his effulgence." As I took leave of him, for 2 years after this, I was engaged in the movement for national liberation. Still, there was a lingering spiritual dissatisfaction within me, and I felt the imminent need of inner harmony over everything else. At the same time, I was keenly aware of the insufficiency and inefficacy of my personal effort alone. At this juncture, casually, I took the manuscript copy of Sri Ramana Gita and turned the pages. My eyes settled on those brilliant verses in praise of the Maharishi in the 18th chapter, and as I read them, I was deeply moved. The reminiscences of my first visit to Maharishi were vividly recalled, and I decided to proceed to the blessed abode of the Maharishi in Arunachalam and abide there forever. I reached Thiruvannamalai on the evening of 2nd of January 1923. After sitting for a while on my way in the serene twilight, I proceeded towards the ashram eagerly. Though the moon was up, the light was dim on account of clouds, and I could not discern my way up the hill to Skandashramam. When I was looking about for some guide, someone intimated to me that the Maharishi was living at the Samadhi cottage of his mother on the way round the hill, about a mile from the town. I knew that Maharishi's mother had passed away in 1922, but had no idea at all that he had changed his abode. So I walked along that road and arrived at the Maharishi's thatched hut. When I arrived, his brother was worshipping at the Samadhi of his mother, and the Maharishi was peacefully reclining with closed eyes on an elevated dais. As I bowed and stood before him, he opened his eyes, smiled at me and queried, "Did you take leave of your parents to come here?" I was caught, and I asked him in reply why he should put me such a question when he had himself attracted me to his feet. The Maharishi's face bloomed again, and he advised me to inform my parents about my whereabouts so that they may be somewhat free from anxiety. There were many others also assembled there from various places, and I came to know that they had come for the 43rd birthday celebrations of the Maharishi, which was to take place the next day. Ganapati Muni. When I entered Maharishi's hut early the next morning and bowed down to him, there were many devotees seated before him, but my attention was particularly gripped by a radiant personality amidst that group. He was, I learned, Kavyakanta Ganapati Sastri. He had the face cut of the great poet Rabindranath Tagore, and from the light that shone on his face, I found how mistaken I had been in my hitherto impression that he was only one of the learned pandits. His broad forehead, gracefully bright eyes, aquiline nose, charming face and beard, and the melodious ring in his voice, all these proclaimed that he was a genius, a great poet, a rishi. Everything about him reminded me of the Vedic seers, especially Vasishtha. And it is interesting to note that he was of the line of Vasishtha. There was authority, dignity and sweetness in his talks, and his eyes sparkled as he spoke. He had just composed, on the occasion of the Maharishi's 43rd birthday, the following verse in Sanskrit. It is effulgent Devi Uma shining in your eyes, dispelling the ignorance of devotees. It is Lakshmi Devi, the consort of lotus-eyed Vishnu, in your lotus face. It is Paravak, inspired word Saraswati, the concert of Brahma, dancing in your talk. Great seer Ramana, the teacher of the whole world, how can mortal man praise you adequately? Those who have come in contact with Ganapati Muni would find this verse well suited to describe him also. He was then living in the mango tree cave on the eastern slope of Arunachala. Adjoining it and a little above it is the perennial spring, Tirumulaipal Teertham. This cave has often served as the Maharishi's summer abode when he lived at Virupaksha cave. It was here in the mango tree cave that Ganapati Muni composed extempore the last quarter of 1,000 verses in praise of Uma, Uma Sahasram, within a few hours one night in the presence of the Maharishi. One evening I went to that cave to see him. I waited for him a few minutes in the room next to the cave before Ganapati Muni emerged from the cave. There was the fragrance of tapas in the person of the Muni and about his residence. I sat down before him after paying my respects to him. He silently looked at me for a few minutes. Then I had a talk with him about spiritual sadhana and the details of discipline needed for it. After a few days, I expressed to the Maharishi my desire to go through the principal Upanishads. Maharishi directed me to go to Nayana, saying that he was the man who could elucidate anything concerning sacred lore. So I went to Nayana and placed before him a passage from the Taittiriya Upanishad for explanation. He dilated upon its profound significance with clarity and ease. After hearing him for an hour, I came to the conclusion that I need not make a study of the Upanishads under him, as whatever he uttered was Upanishadic. Though Nayana was himself a man of wisdom and tapas, he used to direct aspirants coming to him to the Maharishi. He knew that there was a special effect in hearing the truth of Atman from the Maharishi himself, and Maharishi would send to Nayana devotees who sought light upon upasana, that is, methods of worship, or details pertaining to various sastras. Thus, their mutual appreciative relationship was beautiful. Guidance and grace. After the devotees who had gathered for the birthday celebrations had left the ashram, one morning I approached Maharishi with my problem. How am I to rise up from the present animal existence? My own efforts in this direction have proved futile, and I am convinced that it is only a superior might that could transform me, and that is what has brought me here. Maharishi replied with great compassion, "Yes, you are right. It is only the awakening of a power mightier than the senses and the mind that they are subdued. If you awaken and nurture the growth of that power within you, everything else will be conquered. One should keep on the current of meditation uninterrupted. Moderation in food and other restraints will be helpful in maintaining the inner poise." It was this grace of Maharishi that gave a start to my spiritual career. A new faith was kindled within me, and I had found in the Maharishi a strength and support to guide me forever. Another day, questioned about the problem of brahmacharya, Maharishi spoke thus: "To live and move in Brahman is the real brahmacharya. Continence, of course, is very helpful to achieve that end. But so long as you identify yourself with the body, you can never escape sex thought and distinction. It is only when you realize that you are the formless, pure consciousness that sex distinction disappears for good, and that is brahmacharya, effortless, spontaneous." 4 months after I came to Arunachalam, my parents came there to have darshan of Maharishi and take me back home, though they did not succeed in their latter intention. They were somehow consoled by the Maharishi before they returned. My father is a cousin of the Maharishi, older than him, and as such knew him very intimately as a boy before he left home for Thiruvannamalai. Though he had heard from others about the Maharishi and read carefully Sri Ramana Gita, he came there with an open mind to see for himself what the Maharishi was. But the moment he saw him, he was so overpowered by a sense of veneration that he prostrated before him with emotion and observed, "There is nothing here of the Venkatraman I knew, nothing to identify him." Maharishi gracefully smiled and remarked, "Oh, it is long since he disappeared," indicating the complete transformation he had undergone. My father then told the Maharishi that he had not come to him so long as he had not achieved dispassion for the world. "How could a man," he said, "who has no spirit of renunciation in him, be benefited by the company of the sage?" The Maharishi, from his usual and normal high level, replied, "Oh, then you seem to be obsessed by the delusion that you are going to achieve vairagya, that is, non-attachment, in some distant future. If you just discern your real nature, the self, with what is it attached? Dispassion is one's very nature." One day, someone told the Maharishi about a devotee who claimed to be Ramana himself and said that honoring him was honoring Ramana. Maharishi replied with a smile, "There is nothing wrong about it. It is all right. But if somebody else claims the same status for himself, this man should not deny it, because everyone is Ramana. All is Ramana." We all enjoyed that straight and humorous remark of Maharishi. As the reconstruction of the ashram cottage was then going on, Maharishi often remained with his devotees and visitors in the big stone mantap situated on the other side of the road. Maharishi used to dine with all in the shade of a huge mango tree in front of his mother's samadhi. There was cool water kept in big pots at the foot of the tree during these hot summer days. All of us enjoyed the cool shade, the cool water, and the grace of the Maharishi, which, like a cool breeze, removed the heat of man's torments.